You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where Harry Reid is a terrorist interrogator and the singer from Blink-182. But you already knew that. I'm your host, Justin Emlesneski, the hopeful bromantic, and I retroactively and proactively denounce everything I've ever said and ever will say. And I say that especially because of this week. Don't take everything I'm saying as true. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You'll understand what that means in a minute here, because I need plausible deniability with one of these topics we're going to talk about. We're recording this episode a day late. It's a long weekend, so we're out and about on adventures this weekend, so we weren't able to record on the usual Sunday. So we are recording and releasing this on Midside Monday. So if those of you are listening in on the Discord, I don't know if there's anyone yet, but once they are, you'll be listening in live on Midside Monday. And that's one of those adventures is my co-host. He's out in Ohio. So let's bring him in. Joining me this trip from LeBron James's backyard, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, joining you from sunny, beautiful Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where I've been celebrating Memorial Day in the traditional way of having lots of burnt meat and various forms of adult beverages. And we're looking at the pool, but not getting in the pool because it was like 50 degrees this week. And so the pool is not quite 70 degrees. So not pool weather exactly, but would be pool weather because it's nice and sunny today. But the big news was my sister got promoted. She is a master sergeant now in the Air Force, and she got to have the little ceremony today. And my dad got to pin her new patch onto her uniform, and we got some pictures, and I posted them to the Discord, so you can check it out. Really proud of my sister. She's an E7 now in the military ranking, and that's like a big deal. So she's a senior NCO now. So congratulations to her, and got to see all my family. And Justin, let me tell you, man, masks are optional here in Ohio. I do have a little adventure. We went kayaking yesterday. That's why we were going to record yesterday, but we kind of got a slow start to kayaking. And part of the reason was we got stopped by the 5-0, man. You want to know why? My brother.
Well, if I didn't, it wouldn't be good pod if I didn't want to know. So
my brother didn't have a Ohio regulation life jacket. He had a life preserver that's good for the Great Lakes up in Michigan, but they've stopped him and told him he couldn't put his kayak in the water until he had a real life jacket.
So Ohio has more stringent life preserver laws than the Great Lakes in Michigan?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And if any of us had been residents of Ohio, we would have had to register our boat, our kayaks, but thankfully none of us are. But the 5-0, that delayed us by about 40 minutes because someone had to go back, you know, run home and get an extra officially sanctioned by Ohio life jacket so that we could get in the water.
Did they stop you right before you got in the water? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, the park ranger came.
And where did you get the kayaks? Did you rent them? Or did someone have them?
My brother brought some from Michigan, and my sister has some, and then she rented some from the base.
Shouldn't the base have them registered? Couldn't you have just been like, oh, they're all registered with the base?
Well, it wasn't the... Thankfully, none of us being Ohio residents, we didn't have to have the kayaks registered. So we're cool on that front.
Man, even Ohio with the overarching, overstretch of government there, that seems very tedious. Are they trying to protect the kayak manufacturing industry or the kayak sales industry, retail industry in Ohio?
No. I thought you'd appreciate that. So that's why we couldn't have the pod. We couldn't record the podcast yesterday, is because we started about an hour late.
I kind of get the life preserver thing, right? Because that's kind of like the seatbelt thing. I'm still not saying it should be required because obviously personal choice.
Well, and he had a flotation device. He just didn't have a life jacket. You know what I mean? Right. Like he had a flotation device.
Well, rubber ducky armbands don't count as a flotation device in Ohio, apparently.
Apparently not, no.
But I don't get the register. I don't get the registered kayak. Like, I don't get the rationale for that. Like, is your kayak going to is it because they want to make sure your kayak is regulation? So in order to get registered, you have to get it inspected first.
I don't know. I haven't looked into this. Registering kayaks is all new to me, but,
Yeah, I've never heard of that before, ever.
No mask anywhere. Strange. Everything says, masks are optional. Now, some of the workers are wearing masks, obviously, still, but yeah, there's all the signs say mask optional everywhere here in Ohio.
Well,
so
let's
far.
Keep going with that topic, but first you have to hit the music because we need a sense of routine here.
Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and
And to keep that routine going, that sense of routine going, I'd like to remind you all that you can support us on Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. That's themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. We accept any and all support, including affirmations. So, yeah, William, with the mask thing, you're saying masks are optional there. I got to ask for a little bit of clarification. When you say there, you mean Ohio. And do you mean inside and outside? And the reason I ask this is because Universal came down with a big thing that led Disney to do it. Or I like to believe Universal hears behind the scenes what Disney is going to do. And so they do it before Disney just to get the jump on them from a PR perspective. But they came down and they said, if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to wear masks inside. But we're not going to check. We're not going to require vaccination IDs, proof, receipts, passports, whatever word you want to use. And quickly, everyone has followed suit, right? You basically don't have to wear a mask around here anymore. So is it the same thing in Ohio where they're claiming you have to be vaccinated to not wear a mask?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I, of course, disavow everything I will say and ever say in the future. I don't know the exact official rules. All I know is... everywhere I go here, there's a sign that says masks are optional. There are a few people still wearing a mask. And there's signs that say masks are optional. A lot of the restaurant workers are wearing masks, though not all of them. Certainly the chains, they're still wearing masks, like the Starbucks, the Jersey Mike's, McDonald's. I've seen all the employees wearing masks. Kroger, all the workers were wearing masks. But... none of the patrons are. I mean, maybe a scattering handful of patrons are of these establishments. So I don't know the official rule they've set here, but what it means in practice is no one's wearing a mask. Now, in the airport, everyone was wearing a mask when I landed in Columbus. So it's going to be interesting to see. Although there were, I did notice a lot of people being a lot more lackadaisical with the mask in the compared to LAX in the airport, a lot of people were just walking around like holding a Starbucks cup, you know, without their mask on. Right. That certainly would get you scolded in LA because you're supposed to, you know, be sitting down at your eating area and doing it sort of thing. So, yeah, I think here for all intents and purposes, the mask mandate is over here, at least in this part of Ohio.
Yeah, and when you bring up the airport, that's an important factor here going forward because that's federal, right? And we know that there's still a federal mask mandate, I believe. Actually, can you fact check me on that? I don't know.
Yes, for airline flights, yes. So I'm assuming that would also be for the airports. And okay. And Justin, if there's any place to have a mask mandate, it would be those sort of hubs where there's travel, right? Like that. Of any place that you would get me to start to say, oh, okay, I could see this being a thing. Airports make sense, right? Like this is, you know, thousands of people traveling all over the world. If you think about how viruses spread through network effects, like, yeah, that makes sense, right? Like if that's going to be the last place that there's any sort of mask mandates, then I can understand that, right? Like that
yeah,
at least
goes,
makes
that
rational sense.
Right, that goes back all the way to the beginning, right? Where one of the first things Trump did was he shut down travel from China, and everyone's like, "Ah, it's xenophobic." But it's, as you said, it's not about being xenophobic. It's saying there's a virus there, and the major way it's going to be spread is via travel. So let's have there not be travel, right? So I get where you're coming from. That's not as interesting to me as the other part, right? We're going to have here a cultural thing, and that's my big question here. My big question about all of this is the culture around mask mandates. Because I asked a question in the Discord, and I'm going to bring it up here, and I'm going to push the argument further here. The question I asked is, because nobody's asking for vaccine passports, is it right to lie about being vaccinated or not? And I say that because AV Club, our friends over at the AV Club, and I use the term friends loosely, have a hilarious article. And it's not, I don't mean Babylon Bee hilarious. This is not intended to be hilarious. The headline is fully vaccinated people and also just liars can now go mask free at theaters. Great news. I'm going to read the first paragraph here. Great news for those people who have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19 and also just liars today, as AMC theaters and several other major movie chains have announced that said patrons will no longer have to wear masks while in their theaters. This is per The Hollywood Reporter, which notes that anyone who has received two doses of the Moderna or Pfizer vaccines, one dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, or who is just cool with lying their ass off and endangering the people around them, is good to demask while watching all the summer's hottest films. Now, of course, they're referring to the fact that AMC is also not requiring vaccine passports, IDs, whatever fucking term you want to use. I don't care whatever the term is you want to use. And that's the question I want to ask you, because the AV Club here is clearly trying to use shame, right? They're clearly trying to use shame to get people to continue to wear masks. And my major argument about everything that has happened over the past year and a half is that shame has been used. Shame has been used to enforce collectivism and altruism. The idea that you are being shamed into believing that your mere existence is harmful for other people, so you have to take steps to make your own life uncomfortable in order to show that you care about other people. So that's the base context I want to set. Now, the further context I want to set is, these companies are taking a step that I believe they're passing cancel culture on to all of us. Knowing that if we all absorb it simultaneously, nothing can be done. And what I mean by that is if one person is singling him or herself out, it's easy to be brigaded. If one company does it, it's easy to be brigaded. But if everyone at the same time is saying essentially, fuck masks, there's nothing that can be done besides these people whining and writing these pissy articles like the AV Club wrote. And the reason I'm saying this is, I'm going to use AMC as an example in specific in a second, but in general, if they really wanted to say, if you're vaccinated, don't wear a mask, they would require it. It being a passport or whatever term you want to use. They would require you to prove when going into Disney, not only show your ticket, but show that you have been vaccinated. Same thing with Universal. Same thing with any of these companies. They could very easily say, have it on your phone, have a barcode, right? Dr. Drew talks about it all the time. You can just put a barcode on my phone really easily that someone can scan and see that I have indeed been vaccinated. It wouldn't be that difficult. They know that. If they really wanted to enforce vaccination, they could. But my supposition here is they don't want to enforce it. They know it's uncomfortable. They know it's bullshit. The only reason they've been enforcing a lot of these things for the long run is because they know the societal pressure. But they see they're at a point that they can push it in the other direction because of things that, you know, Florida has done, Texas has done, now the things the CDC is saying. So they're taking it and they're saying, we're going to take this risk and we're going to pass it on to the consumer and let them decide. Let them decide what's going to happen. And I think this is exactly true with the instance of AMC. With the instance of AMC. When the theaters first opened in September, when I went to see Tenet, the AMC CEO came out and he said, we're not requiring masks. Everyone flipped the fuck out on him and he had to walk that back. And then he did a thing, William, he did a thing where he said, we're going to make it so for AMC Stubbs members, the people most likely to go to the movies when they were first opening in September, it's $5 for a large popcorn and you don't have to wear a mask if you're eating or drinking. Well, what's he essentially saying there? Pay us an extra $5 and you don't have to wear a mask. Well, now we fast forward to now, and he's saying, if you're vaccinated, but we're not going to ask you for proof, you don't have to wear a mask at the movie theater. So here's my thing about the lying. I think it's morally acceptable to lie in this situation. The reason I think it's morally acceptable is I think these companies want you to. Nobody's going to ask you directly if you're vaccinated, but people are going to make an assumption.
I don't think they can, right? I mean, HIPAA laws apply.
Right. So they may know that they might not even be able to, which was something way at the beginning, right? There were people saying, I can't wear a mask because it's against my, you know, my health, and you can't ask why because of HIPAA laws. So they might not even be able to. So that's a huge factor as well. But people will look at you and assume you're vaccinated, and that's a tacit lie. And I understand the argument that it's private property and they can enforce whatever rules they want, but I think this rule is a dog and pony show. I think it's a dog and pony show for the insane cancel culture people, for the insane pro-maskers, for the insane pro-vaccine people. And I don't mean that in the sense of, like, if you think, as I've had this discussion before, I think vaccines are an individual decision. I think they're an individual decision. If you think this is the best thing for you, get the vaccine. If you don't think it's the best thing for you, don't get the vaccine. I don't really care if you're vaccinated or not. I don't care. But there are people who think everyone should get vaccinated. And I think it's for those people. And I think this rule and the way it's been phrased, William, in the same way we previously talked about, saying masks are optional rather than saying, you know, masks are no longer required. I think all this rhetoric is being done to make it so it's harder for these people to get angry without seeming like they're fucking insane.
Yeah, I think we'll see this prove out, Justin. If how long until we get the first attempted cancellation, the first brigading of someone who is not wearing a mask and has definitely come out as an anti-vaxxer?
It's not right? Just anti-vaxxers, though, is it? I mean, it's just like, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but in this case, I've said before.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think, anyone who's publicly, anyone who's publicly said that, right? When is the shame campaign going to start? Oh, I saw Justin, watching Tenet, and he didn't wear a mask. And I know he doesn't have a vaccine.
I mean, I haven't worn a mask in like a week in Florida now, except at school, which is the big, don't even get me started on that. But I haven't worn a mask. I've done a bunch of things and I haven't worn a mask.
I think I'm reading a book about disasters and someone, and they reminded me of this quote. Someone had said, you know, we're making comparison to other epidemics. And this has always been an uncomfortable topic, you know, as even though I have checked my gay male privilege, the AIDS epidemic, we know that behavior change in that case would have stopped a lot of the effects, like the spread and slow the spread, right? We know condoms and other, promiscuous, like multi-partner sex, that's where a lot of the risk comes from for HIV. And someone at the beginning of the pandemic was like, you know, the mask is the new condom. And the deep irony is that that's true in multiple levels, meaning like the whole reason we still have a lot of problems with HIV in the gay community and in Africa is because of the lack of condoms and people who take risky sex, sexual behaviors. Right. And so there's a double deep irony there that masks are the new condom. It's really, and that connects back to what I was talking about with airports. You know, where should you wear masks? Well, maybe at the airport, if there's like this virus spreading around, that makes sense. Should you wear it when you're going into the gym? Right? Probably not. Do you need it outside? Most definitely not. Should healthcare workers be wearing it? Probably yes. These are all things that make sense, but we've never, the mandate was never about making sense, right? It was all political theater from the beginning. In the beginning, it was masks aren't effective, don't worry about it, but we knew that was a lie. And then it's like, okay, now everyone's required to wear a mask. Okay, that's also a lie. So I think it comes down to, Justin, there are people who have been awakened in the anti-woke sense, and they just don't want to be lied to in this way.
Right, and that's why I'm going to ask you the question again, the one I asked in the chat when you gave the sort of abstract in the Discord, you sort of gave the more abstract answer. In this specific instance, is it right to lie about being vaccinated?
I think it is. Yeah.
Okay. That's all I wanted to hear. That's all I wanted to hear. I believe that. I believe it. And as I put forward in the argument, I'm going to step forward that I think they want you to lie. I think they want you to lie. That's what I think. I think these companies want you to lie because I think everyone wants to go back to normal. And that's my big thing, William, about everything that you said. Right. And I'm going to get a bit normative here when I talk about sexual behavior. But for me, when you talk about masks on faces, you would have to prove there was a drastic change to life on Earth to make us have to wear masks in perpetuity. I even questioned having to wear masks throughout the entire thing. Was the pandemic that much of a change in the way the atmosphere works, in the way the human body works, in the way viruses work, that suddenly we had to change the way human beings interacted for a year? And I know it happened once in like 1918 or whatever it was before, where people wore masks for 2 years or whatever. I don't necessarily believe that propaganda. Not that they didn't. I believe that they did wear masks, but I don't believe when people start throwing stuff around like evidence. Oh, this is evidence that it's happened before. Whereas when you look at the behavior of multiple unprotected partners in short periods of time, is that normal, healthy behavior? Do you understand the distinction I'm drawing here, William?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like, I know you want to go normative, but I just, before we even go normative, I just look at it from like the network effects, right? Like we talk about super spreader and super spreader events, and that gets thrown around, you know, it's been politicized like everything else. But the, you know, the actual scientific idea of the thing makes sense, right? Like back, you know, back in the 80s, like there was like one flight attendant that was responsible for spreading HIV across, you know, most of the world, right? Like he just happened to be the super spreader, right? The sort of like Typhoid Mary of this, of the AIDS epidemic. And the same thing happens in any disease spread. There's always that one person that is that, you know, there was that first group of people, person or people that took the virus out of China, right? That, and those are the super spreaders. And where did that come from? The airports. So again, going back to what I said earlier, like maybe masks for 2 years in the airports make sense, but we also talk about, you know, you talk about when we talk about who's at risk for this disease, you know, different diseases affect different age groups and, right, and health groups differently. So the fact that we were doing this in sort of a blunt force, brute force sort of way didn't really help.
Right. Where when you talk about the AIDS epidemic, right, you're talking about something that, first of all, when you get it, it hurts you much more and hurts everyone much more. Right. It's not like you get it and then like, oh, based on age or general health, it's going to affect you more or less. Like it hurts everyone on a huge level. Right. And then second of all, there was a small community it got into, right, a smaller community it got into, which is why, I mean, can I take a guess, William? Was that flight attendant homosexual?
How did you know?
Maybe I'm stereotyping based on his job. Maybe I'm stereotyping based on AIDS, HIV, yeah, whatever you want to say. But my point is, it affected that network. Do you get what I mean? I mean,
exactly.
Look at
exactly.
LA, right? Look at Southern California, right? You're going to tell me if there's something that's highly communicable there that's not going to somehow get into the homosexual community in California? And that's something I've said in the beginning. When you have something that's not as communicable and isn't as dangerous, such as corona, if you are already living your life in a healthy way, you know, you're not going around and you're not going around and seeing a lot of different people. And when you are, you're keeping your distance from them and you're being generally hygienic, then you are less likely to get it and spread it when you do get it. I mean, last summer, William, I was at Universal a bunch. I had a season pass. There was no one there. It was a great time to go. I coached sports all year. If I was going to run into different people and have a huge network, that was someone like me. But I generally am healthy, and I generally live in a hygienic way. So that's why I've always objected to the masks, and why now I think it's imperative, and I think it's right to lie about being vaccinated or not. Just live your life. Go back to normal. And just don't have any guilt about it. That's what bothers me about this AV Club article, William. They're trying to make people feel guilty about living life back to normal. They don't
anymore. I think we'll see how that works, because, you know, it's going to be interesting contrast. You know, I'm going to leave Ohio here, right? I'm going to go back to California. We already see a lot of people getting lackadaisical. I know our date is coming. What is it? June 15th. They're going to consider the options of getting rid of the emergency orders in California. But even if they do, like, Cal OSHA still has to decide what the standards are. And right now it's ridiculous for large employers, right? All the they have to do contact tracing, all this other stuff right now. Like, are those things going to go away on the 15th? It's really unclear right now. And so there might be businesses that it might be till next year before they're allowed back and without restriction, right?
Right.
All it's going to take is one minor outbreak in California, let's say, and they're going to be clamoring to go back to lockdown.
Right. And again, the issue from the beginning has been the numbers are wonky. We don't know how to actually measure it. We don't know if the numbers that are being told to us are actually honest or not. So we've been being lied to this whole time, and now they want us to not lie. And they always come up with the insane things. So I'm gonna pivot here to another thing I noticed this week. So this is related to a Zack Snyder thing. So Zack Snyder and Netflix tweeted out this game this week, where Army of the Dead involves a safe cracking thing, where the guy goes down, he's trying to crack the safe where all the money's in, and there's four locks on it. Well, they cracked a game. They created a game, and they said, "Here's four locks. We're gonna have a competition." And I think it was by who's the fastest. I don't know. But you had to crack these four locks in as fast of a time as possible. And then the winner gets an NFT, William. Now, we discussed NFTs in depth, where you explained it to me or not. And you know, you explained them to me, and I talked about whether I liked them or not. And you know I'm not a big fan of NFTs, right? Just the idea of owning something digital that can be easily replicated the exact same way, it doesn't do anything for me. I would not pay for it. No, I'm not going to stop somebody else from paying for it and somebody else to be like, "Oh, this is cool. I won this NFT from Army of the Dead." So I'm not a big NFT fan. But, man, people were going after Snyder's tweet about this. Do you know what they were going after his tweet about, saying why he was a bad person?
I can guess. It's because NFTs hurt the environment.
Yes, that's what they were saying. I had never heard this argument before. Have you heard this argument before?
Yeah, it's very common to talk about how much energy is used in cryptocurrency, like Bitcoin and Ethereum. And since this is probably based on Ethereum, they're talking about that.
Yeah, it's based on Ethereum, and I guess Ethereum is the least efficient NFT, the least efficient cryptocurrency. Is that true, William?
Gosh, I wouldn't even know how to measure that, but yeah, it does require a lot of energy.
Well, and that's the trick of the least efficient, right? It's the same thing with, like, you know, the idea that your basic life, your existence harms people, or in this case, it harms the environment, right? It's this idea that just existing harms the environment. Because here's the deal. Let's take that principle, right? Let's take the principle that Snyder is a bad person for supporting an NFT and using that to promote his movie, because NFTs harm the environment because of the amount of energy used in mining the blockchain. Is that the argument?
Yeah, that's the argument.
Okay.
Think of all the coal that was burned in order to do that.
Okay. So, William, then, how much coal is burned when you're filming a movie that has a lot of makeup for zombies, a lot of CGI for a zombie tiger, as well as many other elements in it, and then you are mainly distributing that digitally. How much energy is used?
I think way more than the NFT.
Right. So then, if we are using that argument, wouldn't we have to say that we can't make movies anymore?
Absolutely. Just like you're not supposed to have babies. You're supposed to just die, Justin.
Right. So then, you're supposed to just die, William. So you're going to take the stance then with the question I was about to ask. How many other things are we supposed to stop doing? You would say everything.
Everything. Yep.
Save the world, kill yourself, basically.
Yeah, I think we said it before on Exploit the Earth Day. That's the only other argument the ultimate consistent version of their argument is save the Earth, kill yourself.
Right, and that's it blows my fucking mind, William, that nobody is consistent with these arguments. Is it just that they get a sense of moral superiority? They get like an emotional, they get a I forgot the word. They get an endorphin. Endorphin's the word I was looking for. They get an endorphin boost from saying this about NFTs, right? It's just like, oh, look how woke I am. Look how educated I am. I know more.
I mean, did they consider the electricity they used to send that tweet? How many trees did they plant per day? For all the tweeting.
Is that what we're going to have to do? Is that like buying
carbon offsets? Yeah.
Offsets? Are we all going to have to do that? Like the amount of times you tweet in a day is the amount of plants you have to plant that day or something?
Yeah, somebody figure that out. Figure out how many trees you have to plant per tweet. It's probably like some percentage of a tree, right? And then we can just find people who are prolifically tweeting and remind them. I can set up a bot to just tweet at them and let them know how many trees they have to plant.
All right. So a couple other shorter, quick things here. One is, and I didn't even read the article, William, I linked to it and it'll be linked to in the show notes on themidside.com. But there's a hilarious ESPN headline. Son, ghostwriter of late senator, say Trump intervened to stop probe of Patriots Spygate scandal. This goes back to, I wanted to highlight this in the show because this goes back to something I talked about for years, not just Spygate, Deflategate, and I'm going to use a pun here, these trumped up charges simply because people can't accept that they're winning, right? They had to make these fictional things. We tracked on this show for a long time how irrational and how much of a lie the Deflategate things are here, right? The Deflategate charges were. If you followed that and you actually read the documents and everything and the court cases, you saw that the whole thing was, you know, it wasn't real. It was made up. And it was all just because people wanted to say this is why they were winning. Same thing with Spygate, right? There's never been any sort of proof that they were doing the things they were doing and it aided them in winning. And I think it's hilarious, William, that they still can't let it go to the point that it's now linked with Trump derangement syndrome.
I guess it gets back to the old adage, everything is political, right?
Well, that's what that side believes, right? Isn't that a Marxist saying? Wasn't it Karl Marx who said everything is political?
Yep. Definitely a leftist trope.
To me, it's more than everything is political. People are pattern seekers, right? That's how human beings make sense of the world. We make patterns, good or bad. You know, if you're actually identifying real patterns that exist, that can help improve the world. But a lot of times we make patterns to make the world make sense to us. And a lot of people who, you know, if you have a mental illness or you have a mental injury, right? And a mental injury is sort of like you could go to the psychologist or the therapist to help you the same way you could go to a doctor if you had a physical injury, right? Get some treatment. Maybe you need a drug or maybe you need a talk therapy. I was going to say CBT. Yeah, cognitive behavioral therapy. It's interesting that CBT and CBD are very similar. So I'll just say that. Maybe you need CBD or CBT. Maybe you need one of those.
Yeah.
Right? It will cause you to create false patterns or identify false patterns. And this is an example of that for me. Oh, we don't like the Patriots and we don't like Trump. we see that, you know, Brady and Trump were friends. So, oh, okay, here's how all of this is linked. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, can we link it to the coronavirus somehow too?
I'm sure they'll do that eventually. I'm sure they'll
UFOs. UFOs. Let's link it to UFOs. Somehow, it's like the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, except for with Trump. We can somehow link the UFOs being in the news to coronavirus to Deflategate. I mean, it's just like, dude, it's just like right now, everything is Gamergate still, right? Years and years later, everything gaming and comics related is Comics Gate or Gamergate.
Well, yeah, I mean, that we saw that with the release of Snyder Cut movement, right? Where think about that. They tried to link Zack Snyder to Trump. They tried to link him to the right wing. They tried to link him to Gamergate. They tried to link all of those things together because it was a threat to the power structure. And it was counterculture in important ways. But it was still, people tried to find patterns in those ways. Now, there is a pattern, right? And the pattern goes back to freedom and respect for individual rights. But no one wants to think that abstractly, so they have these surface-level pattern recognitions. So the UFO thing, William, I think will happen eventually. So one last thing I wanted to talk about. As we're recording this, today is Memorial Day. Hopefully some of you will listen to this because I'll get this edited and uploaded as quickly as I can after we finish recording. And Midsider Patrick put in the chat a random blog, and I thought this was just going to be a random blog, right? It says, please don't say Happy Memorial Day. And this blog is from 2018. I thought this was just going to be a random blog, but he must have seen this somewhere because this argument is catching on. I even had Christine this morning say to me, she said the social justice warriors are taking over social media about Memorial Day. And I'm saying, what are you saying? What do you mean? And she explained this argument to me they're using. So if even Christine is noticing it on Instagram, and I'm just going to read one paragraph here very quickly. Memorial Day is designated to remember the lost. It is a time to honor fathers and mothers, sons and daughters, brothers and sisters, family members and friends who proudly wore the uniform but never returned. That seems like a microaggression to me. There are other familial roles that are not mentioned.
That's true.
I think they should be mentioned. I think that's a little unfair. Going back to the article. It is a day for gathering at cemeteries, for moments of silence, for tributes and parades of honor. Saying Happy Memorial Day, however innocently, is awkward at best and can be offensive. And then there's a link about if you want to read up on the history of the holiday or whatever. So, William, especially because you are near a military base right now, I'm going to ask you, and you served, right? Now, obviously, you're alive, so that would be Veterans Day. But I'm still going to ask you, as someone who has more context than me, is saying however Happy Memorial Day awkward at best and offensive at worst?
To me, no. And to be clear, like I do feel awkward on Veterans Day because I was a uniformed civilian. I was not in the military directly, which is means technically not a veteran. But I appreciate when people tell me. I mean, they've seen, you know, my friends and family have seen me deploy, and I've been in hostile environments multiple times. And so to them, it's the same. And so when they tell me Happy Veterans Day, I don't correct them and say I'm offended and how dare you call me a veteran. I say thank you because I know what the intent is, right? And I know what they're honoring. And I think the same goes here for Memorial Day, right? I think it's okay to say, hey, you know, remember this is for the fallen. That I think is okay. But to say it's offensive, I don't know. That just seems like, I don't know. It seems like we talked about shaming earlier. It just seems like unnecessary shame, right? I could totally see using it as an opportunity to say, if someone wishes you Happy Memorial Day, and you could say, thank you. I'm thinking about, you know, that friend or family member that didn't make it back, right? And take it in that light. Like, what happened to assuming positive intent for this stuff? I don't know. I'm not offended at all if someone says Happy Memorial Day. I've said it myself today.
Yeah, I'm kind of a jerk. I don't go around saying, like, happy whatever day it is. But I do think in general.
You do say Happy Death Day.
You know what I'm talking about, the movie. I do think in general, though, we do just appreciate the day off for work. And when we say happy Memorial Day, I don't think we're necessarily thinking about what it's about. So I think that I agree with you that there's a point hidden in here about the value of understanding why we have holidays, right? And holidays commemorate things. I do think also that the commemoration of an event can be a positive experience. I don't think it has to involve ceremonies. Ceremonies. I meant to say cemeteries, though. I don't think it has to involve cemeteries. It doesn't have to involve moments of silence.
I have not done either of those things today. And
right.
No cemetery visiting and no... I mean, technically, there was a ceremony. My sister got pinned today. She got promoted. But, I mean, that was a very informal ceremony. The most formal thing was she took the senior enlisted men or person, whatever you're supposed to say, oath. That was the most formal thing that could be considered a ceremony.
Right. And, you know, moments of silence, like in the morning announcements at the school I teach at, they do a moment of silence every morning. And to me, that undermines the importance of it. And even the idea of a moment in silence, I do recognize that right now we're at a place in our culture in America that we're sort of losing a common culture, or it's not as defined anymore. So I understand the importance of external rituals and shared values 100%. But your honoring of the dead, of the people who served and died, doesn't have to be a moment of silence. And it doesn't have to be an external demonstration of that memorialization. And also, don't they always say when people die, the best way to honor someone who died is to live a good life?
Yeah.
So do you think they want you to be dour on the day they die, on Memorial Day, to honor their death? Or do you think they would want to say, hey, you know, thanks for having a cookout and like having a good time with your friends and family to honor my death?
Yeah.
There just seems to be, like you said, a lot of lack of assumed positivity. And the why couch this in the idea of it can be offensive, right? There's a teachable moment here, without a doubt. I agree with you. There's a teachable moment. As a teacher, there's a teachable moment here. But why is it couched in the you can offend people, and it's not couched in the, hey, do you know what the holidays are for and what this holiday is for?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think that's a great place to end the Life on the Midside segment. I'm really excited to review the movie this week. I was very pleasantly surprised by it. So let's hit the music. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. If you would like to continue the conversation with us during the week, please join our Discord channel. You can do so by going to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link, and there's a join our Discord link in the episode posts. We've got some great articles, great conversation during the week going on. You saw a couple of them made it onto the show. Somebody who's listening in right now, Midsider Tom, posted an article about tennis player Naomi Osaka quit the French Open. I don't know, like, I think you just withdraw from the French Open. So even that New York Times headline there is a little deceitful, right? It's a little deceptive. The idea that she quit the French Open, like, does that mean she's with him? Is she never going to do the French Open again because she quit the French Open?
Yeah, yeah. She's done. She's just done with it.
Why can't you just write the word? Why can't they just write the word withdraws? I don't understand. Anyway, she withdrew because of depression, apparently. And she wrote about how she struggled with it since 2018. And Midsider Tom asked a very good question. Millennial crybaby or legitimate cause? So get in there and discuss that. I think there's a really interesting discussion about our culture and specifically our generation. You know, as he said, Mr. Tom said, millennial crybaby. So I think there's a really interesting discussion. Get in the Discord, talk about that. that I would love to see what everybody's thoughts are, because I don't think that is an easy question, and I don't think this is an easy issue. But that's the reason to join the Discord. We got a lot going on during the week. So hit up themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link. You'll find the join link there. So, William, this week I want to review the movie Cruella. Cruella is one of these Disney prequel side stories, and I use the word side story very intentionally here because it factors into my review, about the Disney villains and what they did before the famous movies they were in. This is, of course, about Cruella de Vil, the villain of 101 Dalmatians, who famously wants to kidnap a bunch of Dalmatian puppies and make a fur coat from them. This stars Emma Stone as the titular character. Do you remember, William, doing trailer takedown for this movie?
Vaguely. I think I remember when I watched it, my thing was, hey, is this going like in a Devil Wears Prada direction? Like, that was my hope, but my fear was it was going to be the Dalmatians' fault.
So it was not the Dalmatians' fault. It did go in the Devil Wears Prada direction. It did go in the Devil Wears Prada direction, and the Dalmatians were owned by the evil fashion designer that Estella worked for, Emma Stone worked for. Okay. Now, I don't want to give too much away about the story, but I will explain about this movie. First, I want to talk about what I thought with trailer takedown is I was worried for two things. One, they didn't make Emma Stone's performance look good in the trailers. They didn't. And I will say this, William, Emma Stone's performance is worth the price of admission on its own.
Wow.
There is one scene, William, where she's transitioning from Estella to Cruella. There is one scene. I don't mean transitioning in like the gender. I just mean she's changing, right? It's a whole psychological thing with the movie, right? Estella is one side of her personality. Cruella is another side. And there's a brief concern with that, which I'll get to in a second here. But there's one scene where literally the camera is just on her. There's no edits. There's no fancy camera work. There's no fancy camera angle. It's just direct on Emma Stone, and she's delivering a monologue. And it is tremendous. It is worth watching. We already knew here in the Midside, where we're La La Land fans, we already knew Emma Stone's a great actress. This is a great performance by Emma Stone. Phenomenal. It's worth watching. So I'll say that. So that's already giving you a hint of what directions I'm going to go with the review. So the basic premise of this movie is she has two sides to her personality, and she's learning about her past and where she comes from. Her good side is Estella, and her bad side is Cruella, and Cruella basically has narcissistic personality disorder. So the other concern I had with the trailer was that they were going to go in the direction they went with Maleficent, where Maleficent ended up being like, oh, here's a critique of why humans hurt the environment. Oh, and here's a critique of why heteronormative relationships are bad. So I refer to Maleficent as lesbian Avatar, because that's essentially how they got sympathy for Maleficent. They essentially said she was a good person because of this. Now, that is my concern with this movie ultimately, which is why I call it a side story. We'll get there at the end. But the good thing about this is they showed there was the good side and the bad side of Cruella's personality, and they also showed why the villain was bad, and it was a legitimate critique of narcissism. Not of selfishness, but of showing his narcissism as being unaware and indifferent to the feelings and effects of other people. Effects on other people.
Okay.
And it showed how bad the villain was for that. Now, Cruella went a little in that direction as well, and the thing that I'm sort of concerned about, and I don't really like as much, is even though she made the decision to become Cruella in order to fight the villain, at the end, they sort of tempered that by saying, oh, well, she's not fully Cruella. She's Cruella, but she's more likable, and she has a family, whereas the villain didn't. So when you talk about, like, Horace and Jasper, and there are other characters as well that I don't want to spoil, those are her family at the end. And even the Dalmatians are her family. And she gives away Dalmatians at the end, you know, the Dalmatians that end up bringing the main characters of 101 Dalmatians together. She gives those to those people, which makes no sense, because then why would she want the puppies to make a fur coat? So I would imagine they would say, oh, well, she wants the puppies because the puppies are rightfully hers. And they just misunderstand and assume she wants to make the fur coat because, right, she invested the puppies to make more. Right. Midsider Tom just said that in the Discord. She ultimately ends up investing the puppies to make more. And then they're, once she, you know, doesn't get her puppies back because they're her property, people are going to assume, oh, she wants to make a fur coat out of them. Because at a certain point, she had Dalmatians and people were speculating whether she had made a fur coat out of them. So it sort of undermines the Disney story if you turn her into just a misunderstood person in 101 Dalmatians. So that's my biggest critique of the, right? Midsider Tom just said in the Discord, my return on investment, right? She didn't get her return on investment, right? And that undermines that. That's why I think if you see this as a side story, it's, you can just take that as it is. It's not a direct prequel to the original movie. It's just sort of like a what if. What if Cruella was more sympathetic? And I wish if they had done it as a prequel that they didn't make her sympathetic. And I wish ultimately that we weren't doing these villain movies where we're making the villain sympathetic. Instead, we went into what drives them and what makes them villainous. But I do think that it's both a good and a bad thing, because it's a bad thing because we're having sympathy for these villains. But on the other hand, we're having a cultural discussion of what is villainy and what makes someone bad and what makes someone good. Now, are we answering that question sufficiently for my moral system and my beliefs? Not necessarily, right? The answer isn't, oh, so you like some people and you're nice to some people, right? Oh, you have a family, so you're not as bad as the evil narcissist fashion designer. You're just a less bad version of her, right? So now our good guys are less bad versions in movies like this. So is this the ultimate way to tell a let's understand the villain story? No, because I believe the ultimate way to tell the let's understand the villain story is to have the villain remain villainous at the end. Not have sympathy for the devil, so to speak. So that's what's keeping me from giving it a so bromantic rating. I am, William, going to give this a bromantic rating, though. This is an excellent movie.
Wow.
Not every movie. I was surprised when I saw this movie at how good it was. I was surprised. Not every movie has to be something you agree with 100%. Not every movie has to be perfectly executed. But there are so many good elements of this movie, William. The directing, the production design. The production design of this movie is tremendous. The writing is good, right? Everything makes sense. It comes together. And if you understand what they're doing, you get it. And it makes sense. Now, you don't have to agree 100% with the ending, right? We don't have to agree with every piece of art to see it as a good piece of art. You know, this isn't like the Beauty and the Beast live action or the Aladdin live action where it just wasn't as well executed. It didn't come together. Everything comes together with this. The music choices, as I said, the production design, the editing, this is a good movie. It is worth seeing. It's worth sitting down and seeing and just knowing that you're just going to disagree with some of the philosophical implications, some of the thematic implications. But that's okay. That's what good art is. Good art is something that you can say, they did a good job with this. They executed this well. And it was well made and well crafted. I don't necessarily have to agree with this. So, Cruella, worth seeing. Highly recommend it. I would give this a bromantic rating. Not a so bromantic, but a bromantic rating.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Escape Room Tournament of Champions is the sequel to the, I don't want to say it was a horror movie, because this isn't like a Saw type movie, but I guess it's sort of like a psychological horror movie, Escape Room, that came out years ago. I like these kind of movies. I enjoyed Escape Room tremendously. It was a good little movie. I say little because, you know, nobody really talked about it. I don't think it made a huge lot of money. I don't think it costs a lot of money to make. It's got a good premise, though. It takes the escape room thing and sort of crosses it with Saw, where it's like these people are put in escape rooms where their lives are endangered, and you have to be the get through all the escape rooms in order to win. And this one seems to be they take all the people who won previous escape room tournaments and put them in a new tournament. And at the same time, the two people who won from the first movie are trying to undermine the organization and beat the organization and destroy the organization that's putting people into these escape rooms. Because this is part of the whole thing we have going on in our culture right now with the angst of the elite. It's the idea that there's this shadowy elite organization that's controlling everyone and using them as their playthings. So there's a lot going on here that I think is worthwhile. This is a hug for me.
Hug.
Yeah. So this looks like, I think I said this before, we've seen a lot of premises borrowed from video games. Like this could be a video game, right? Like this could be one of those like sort of, think like Return to Monkey Island sort of click through adventure games, right? So it's interesting to see certainly a bigger budget on this one, or at least more, you know, more production value on this one than the original. I did not see the original, but I do remember us talking about it. Yeah, I think this could be fun. I just worry if it's going to be like sometimes with these kinds of movies, there's like a lot of plot devices versus like character choices. And so I wonder if this is going to be one of those. Yeah, I worry that this could lose some depth, you know, more than just like, oh, and then this happened and then this happened. But it sounds like, you know, just from looking at the trailer, they've got this, like you were saying, they've got this sort of underlying story that they're trying to explore this this angst, like you put it really well, talking about the angst of the elites. But I was sort of thinking of it as like this lack of control, this feeling of lack of control that people have, and that this is just dramatizing that. So I'm going to give it a light hug.
Hug? Second trailer.
Infinite is Mark Wahlberg's latest movie. It was originally going to be in theaters, but now it's going to be released directly to Paramount Plus. And it, Mark Wahlberg is immortal. He's immortal in the sense that every time he dies, he comes back to life, but he doesn't have memories of his old life. They have to be brought out of him. And there's a character in the movie, I can't say the actor's name, don't make me try, who's trying to make him remember his previous lives. Because once you remember you're infinite, it makes you more powerful. This seems a lot like Highlander. I love Highlander. I'm really looking forward to the reboot with Henry Cavill. I've been looking forward to that reboot for years before Henry Cavill was even attached to it. I love Mark Wahlberg. It's going to be tough to watch because I don't want to subscribe to another service, but I'm going to figure out a way. Maybe I pay for it for a month. This is a hug for me.
Hug.
Justin, I'm 100% with you on this. It's got guns. It's got explosions. We've got some sci-fi elements. But Paramount Plus, home of STD, the terrible, terrible Star Trek Discovery, I will never subscribe to this. So if it's only going to be on Paramount Plus, I'm sorry, Justin. I'm just not going to see it. So I'm going to tackle it.
Tackle. Third trailer.
Old is M. Night Shyamalan's, M. Night Shyamalan's latest movie. In it, a family goes to a beach where apparently you age very quickly. I don't know what else is going on in this movie. I don't need to know what else is going on in this movie. This looks really interesting. This looks like vintage M. Night. This stuff that made him great in the beginning. It looks like it's going to be a little sort of stilted in the way that The Village is, and that's done for good reason. I don't mind that. I like that. It's a stylistic choice. It fits what he's going for. I'm very excited for this movie. Hug.
Hug.
All right, so you know I haven't seen The Village. Yeah, I think this looks interesting. You know it's going to have some twists. Hopefully I can watch this before someone spoils the twist, because it looks like something that would be enjoyable. You know, the what if the sort of sci-fi twist that's presented is, you know, what if, you know, suddenly people are aging. That sounds interesting, and especially in this world where we've been disconnected. You know, some of us have been disconnected and isolated thanks to COVID. You know, you're getting some of that feeling when you reconnect with people. Like, you know, my parents are definitely older than when I last saw them. But so that it hit close to home. So I think this is very timely. I am going to hug this.
Hug. Final trailer.
Jungle Cruise is Disney's live-action adaptation of the Jungle Cruise ride as a movie. It stars Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt, and they're on some sort of a quest. I don't know what the quest is. I don't care what the quest... I don't know what it is. I don't care what it is. Look, I love Pirates with Johnny Depp. It's one of my favorite film franchises. I think this could be a great way, if successful, to update the ride at Disney. Imagine a Dwayne the Rock Johnson animatronic in Disney World in the Jungle Cruise ride, in Disneyland in the Jungle Cruise ride. In fact, we here in the Midside know that will be his second animatronic in the park, because he will end up in the Hall of Presidents as well. So this looks great. This looks great. I'm gonna see this. Hopefully it doesn't disappoint me. Hug.
Hug.
So, this looks like, I'm glad you pointed out, this looks like Pirates of the Caribbean, except for we can't have Johnny Depp movies right now, so we're going to make this movie instead. That being said, it looks fun, and, it's going to check all the diversity boxes, so at least it won't get canceled, right? Right? Until he runs as a Republican, and then it'll be canceled? All right, all joking aside, it looks like it's going to be a fun movie, so I'm going to hug it.
Hug.
All right, that brings us to the end of this episode. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that it's okay to lie. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
You already knew that. I learned that there's a lot of movies I have to look forward to. There were four hugs. I hugged every trailer, William.
Wow.
As always, I want to thank everyone for listening. If you didn't listen, if William wasn't here, this would just be me ranting into a microphone in a closet, which, you know, it's not a bad way to spend an afternoon. Not a bad way to spend an afternoon, but it's even better. It's even more rewarding when you're listening. If you want to support the show, you can do so in any number of ways. You can do so at themidside.com/store. You can pick up a t-shirt. Patreon and Locals, as I said before, Patreon is per episode, Locals is per month. themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/locals. I neglected to thank the Liberty.me listeners. That line between libertarian and what I believe, I don't even know where it is anymore. So appreciate you. Love you guys. And as always, the best way you can support the show is to tell a friend. Tell a friend about the great discussions we're having here, the interesting things we're talking about, and tell a friend about Discord, getting in there and talking about the tennis player quitting the French Open. Let's have a discussion about that. Millennial crybaby or legitimate cause? Let's talk about that. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Mazeski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a happy Memorial Day. So, Justin, I, too, am recording in a closet today in Dayton because I'm at my sister's house. So I'm going to actually have to come out of the closet now.
Ba-dum-ching. Do you got that drop, that sound effect?
Nope. But now I'm going to have you saying ba-dum-ching as a drop.
Awesome.